Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Welcome to another episode of The Mystery on the Rocks, Do Hollywood. We're doing a special mini-series. Chris has handpicked some lovely unsolved mysteries from Hollywood through the ages. We're going right from the, I believe we started with the 20s with Fatty Arbuckle.
1921.
With me as always, firstly, of course, is fantastic Chris Stokes.
Hello.
And the wonderful Suze Kempner.
Hi, I just found a tiny bit of lettuce on the ground and it's so dry, it's like a bit of paper that's got little tendrils coming off it. But it's strong, man. It's so strong. Her name, Eartha Kitt. There's nothing else. I've got nothing else. Just this bit of paper lettuce. And my podcast. My podcast husband.
So welcome. And as you know, if you've listened before, if you haven't, your first time here, this is the show where we take unsolved true mysteries, put them in a cocktail shaker, mix them up with a cocktail, and then drink it all up.
Shots. The fuck off.
That's what we're doing. I'm gonna find a good intro. I don't know how long it's gonna take me.
We'll get there.
I'll figure it out.
Keep looking.
I want it to be by trial and error as well. I don't want you to have taken like an hour or so and have written one by next week.
Don't worry. Yeah. I will definitely not take an hour or so. That's not going to
Mystery on the Rocks. Oh yeah. Mystery on the Rocks, yeah. Mystery on the Rocks, yeah.
So first, let's do the rounds. What are we all drinking, guys?
I made this.
What have you
looks all good.
What is that? That looks nice.
Do you know what it is? It's a gimlet, so it's lime, cordial and gin, equal parts,
yeah,
with an added ingredient. Bit shot of Grand Marnier.
Ooh,
and it looks like piss. So I've named it.
Yeah.
Looks like piss.
Looks like piss. That's a good,
yeah.
Can I have a looks like piss, please?
Hey, I have a looks like piss, please. And every time you order it, you're like... I'm a funny fucker. I drink a drink that's called Looks Like Piss. But it's really nice. You know what a gimlet is? It's all sharp and sweet.
Yeah.
It's sharp and sweet, like a Tangfastic Haribo.
Oh, those are my favourite Haribos.
They're so good.
They're so good.
This tastes like that, but with a luxury festive edge.
Ooh, but it looks like piss, which is
unfortunate. But it looks like piss.
What are you drinking, Chris?
It's called a Fourth Regiment.
I thought he was going to say, the Fourth Reich. I'd be like, well, here we go.
Chris, for fuck's sake.
1,000 years this drink will go on.
It's the most luxurious, beautiful colour.
Yeah, look at that. That's rich. Mm. Yeah. Rich. Lovely.
It's,
what is it?
It's almost, but not quite a Manhattan.
Oh, okay.
So a Fourth Regiment is whiskey, sweet vermouth, equal parts. But then it's enhanced by dashes of... orange bitters, celery bitters, and Creole bitters, and then garnished with lemon zest.
Whoa.
They're really nice, because this does not taste like a Manhattan at all, and yet it's basically a Manhattan just with...
different bitters.
It's funny that
celery.
Like, that's what'll set something off, is like a bitter, and it's a difference between a bitters or a vermouth. It's like, so I'm going to say tonight's drink for the stream, it's a variation on a whiskey sour. And like everyone's like, oh, well, you know, how far can you go with that? You can go pretty far as soon as you start chucking bitters and other stuff into it. So that one has orange liqueur in it. And then it becomes a completely different drink.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yes, if you listen to a podcast, you should watch our live stream.
Yes, absolutely.
All are welcome. How we do it is it's on Twitch. twitch.tv/mysteryontherocks at 8 p.m. on a Thursday, and you don't need anything special, you just go to that website.
Yeah, you can
you
just
don't
go.
Need to be a member, but you need to sign up if you want to chat with us, and you can.
What are you drinking, Masood?
This is one I made on my stream, which I do on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Fridays. This is a Benchley.
Oh, I really want to try one.
So this is made with whiskey. So I make it with rye whiskey, dry vermouth, and a pineapple sriracha syrup.
Oh, how do you make that?
So you make a pineapple syrup by using equal parts pineapple juice and sugar. I don't know, like 120 grams of sugar and 120 mils of pineapple juice. You put them in a pot, you mix them, you put the sugar in, and about a quarter teaspoon, maybe half a teaspoon, depending on how spicy you like it, of sriracha. And you just stir it on a low heat until the sugar melts. And then that's the syrup. That's it.
I really want to try it.
It's really nice. It is.
Sounds really good.
It's really delicious.
So shall we rewind the clock to 1922?
Yes, we should. Wow, this is 1 year after last week's case.
Oh, this is almost concurrent.
Oh, my God.
Oh,
okay.
It's a year
later. If you remember, last week's case was the death of Virginia Rapp.
Mm.
Yes.
A crime for which Fatty Arbuckle was tried 3 times.
Oh, my God, yeah.
The day before the jury came back with a verdict in the second trial, film director William Desmond Taylor was found shot in the back.
Oh, Fatty Arbuckle strikes again.
What? Yeah, where was Fatty? That's what I want to know.
I don't know where Fatty was, but I assume that he wasn't in jail because it was the second trial, so I imagine he was still...
I just like to have that clip. I don't know where Fatty was. I'm assuming he wasn't in jail. I just want that clip just so I could hold on to it and at some point be like, this is what Chris Stokes said. I don't know where Fatty was, but... So, William Desmond Taylor.
He was one of the, apparently, the leading film directors at this point. So this is kind of like, I don't know, if Spielberg, say, had been found dead.
Whoa. Yeah, this guy was big. Irish-American.
He was found in his bungalow in Westlake, Los Angeles, which was like a well-to-do neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
Also, a lot of his neighbors were in the film business and actors and whatever. This was on the morning, 7:30 a.m. on the 2nd of February. So at the time, the second Fatty Arbuckle trial was still happening.
Wow.
And a crowd gathered inside, and someone who said that he was a doctor stepped forward and made a cursory examination of the body, and he declared that William Desmond Taylor had died of a stomach hemorrhage. So a shitty doctor.
Yeah, he sounds like a doctor who lived at the fucking hotel at Fatty Arbuckle's hotel.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, I'm a doctor.
This doctor was never seen again. and then when doubts later arose, the body was rolled over by forensic investigators,
Jesus Christ,
revealing that he had been shot at least once in the back with what appeared to be a small caliber pistol. The gun was not found at the scene.
Okay.
So already there are discrepancies. Now, as it goes on, actually, I realised, apparently, people found him dead, but they didn't call the police straight away. And the crime scene is almost certainly to have been tampered with.
Whoa.
In terms of, like, it wasn't exactly as crime scene investigators found it.
How long between potentially he had died and the phone call to the police? What was the timeline on that?
Oh, 12 hours, I think.
Fuck it, what? I thought it was, like, half an hour or, like,
oh, no,
you know,
so he was. They determined that his time of death would have been about 10 to 8 p.m. The evening before.
Right.
But he was officially found at 7:30 a.m. the following morning.
Jesus.
Wow.
They ruled robbery out because in his pockets they found a wallet that held $78, which in our money would be $1,100 or $1,200.
Okay.
Jesus, yeah.
They found a solid silver cigarette case, a pocket watch, penknife, a locket. A 2-carat diamond ring was on his finger, so they were like, well, nothing got taken.
Yeah.
But apparently a large nebulous amount, they don't know how much, but a large sum of cash that he'd shown to his accountant the day before was missing and was never accounted for.
Oh.
Well, like, he was in his accountant's office, he's like, hey, check this out, see? Look at all this money I got. Like, yeah, you
showed
keep
it
showing
to him in a sack with a big dollar on it.
That's what I got, see?
Hey,
look at all this money.
You look after the money, this probably impresses you quite a bit. Oh, the voice is back.
Oh, yeah. I think, like, a couple of years before this, like in 1920, I think a promising young starlet had died of a drug overdose. Mm. And that was probably the first big Hollywood scandal.
Yeah.
And then it was sort of compounded by the Fatty Arbuckle scandal and then this one.
Right. Yeah.
it was sort of all of a sudden became gold dust to the press, where they were like, Hollywood's got a seedy underbelly. Oh, and I mean, now yeah, we kind of take that for granted, but at the time it would have been like, oh my God, it's not squeaky clean.
Yeah, right. Mm. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's a huge old story. Massive film director found shot in the back.
Yeah, because like nothing like this. This was like a huge industry. This is like new industry.
Yeah,
and then it's like, and then all of a sudden it's like, then people just start dying.
Yes. Mm.
If there were things to hide that could damage the industry, of course, then they might tamper with the scene, get rid of a few things that they don't want found.
It's the alternate ending. Oh no, we got to get rid of it.
Yeah.
A couple of suspects were involved, or named at least. So the first one was a guy called Edward Sands. He had prior convictions for embezzlement, forgery, and serial desertion from the military.
So what, he just kept, they stop hiring him. He keeps leaving. Just keeps, like, you can't come back, buddy. That's how it is.
He had multiple aliases, and even though he was born in Ohio, he spoke with an affected Cockney accent.
Oh, I bet it was awful. I bet it was like, hello everybody, it's me from London Town.
As convincing James Coburn in The Great Escape. You're like, oh, he's Australian the entire time? I had no idea. It's
such a... Do you find that Americans, when they do an English accent on a British accent on podcasts and stuff, it always really takes me out of it, because they're always terrible, and they always they're always like, "Hello, right?" And like, when do we
go right?
I bet
our American accents are no better though.
Well, I have spoken to an American who was like, "Oh, it's really annoying, because when English people are in American TV and American films, we never realise they're English until we hear them speak in interviews." Apart from Ray Winston in The Departed.
Yes.
It is shocking.
It's so bad.
His accent is horrendous. And it's not just, he can't do Boston. He cannot do any accent that isn't his own. It's like, and here we have our American friend, Ray Winstone. And then he's like, hello, everybody. It's like he can't even do his own accent.
When he's in the car, just before it blows up, and he's like, I'm not going to go out that way. I'm going to shoot myself.
Mm.
He goes, fuck it. Oh, yeah.
Him and Ewan McGregor. Ewan McGregor's one is one that is feels like the dialogue coach left halfway through the production. Yeah. Like, I can't do it anymore. I keep trying to tell him and he just won't listen.
Ewan McGregor, I call him man of 0.75 accent.
Because it's almost there. It's so close.
Ewan, you could see him really concentrating as well, and that makes it worse.
That's what it's, yeah, you can see his little eyes. Like, look at him.
How in the Les Mis movie, Russell Crowe's singing is notoriously terrible, but it's actually no worse than Amanda Seyfried's singing in that film. But Amanda Seyfried, all the way through, she's like, I'm nailing this all over her face. Whereas the whole way through, Russell Crowe is like always about 1 second away from grabbing his willy and going, I'm sorry. Like, he's playing Javert, who's like this maniacal cop. Imagine such a thing. But he's meant to be really intimidating, and the whole way through Russell Crowe's face is going, oh God, I'm really out of my depth. And his singing's terrible.
You can't because of the way films are shot and edited, but you could almost see it in his eyes where he's realised that there's not a single word in this film that isn't sung.
Oh yeah, he's like, oh shit.
Right, so Edward Sands was prior convictions for embezzlement, forgery. He worked as Taylor's valet and cook until 7 months before the murder. And while Desmond Taylor had been in Europe the previous summer, Sands had forged his name on checks and wrecked his car.
Oh shit. What did he use the checks for? Was it just put into his own account, or
almost certainly? He was an embezzler, wasn't he? Also, after that, he burgled William Desmond Taylor's bungalow, leaving footprints on the director's bed.
Yeah, just remind me of the Charlie Murphy sketch from the Chappelle Show, where he's playing the guy Rick James, and he goes to Charlie Murphy's house and puts his feet on his couch, and he's like, fuck your couch. I feel that's what he did. He's just like, fuck your bed. Fuck your bed. I don't give a shit. And he just like, that's right. See, I don't care about your bed. Treat me as your valet. Treat me as your cook. Huh? I'll show you.
But following the murder, he was never seen or heard from again. And you might think, he did it then. But wait. The guy who replaced him as valet was a guy called Henry Peavy. He also became a suspect as well. Now, this guy, bearing in mind this is 1922.
Yeah.
not very enlightened times. Henry Peavey was a black man. The newspapers reported that he wore flashy golf costumes but didn't own any golf clubs.
Oh, because you weren't allowed on golf courses back then. Exactly. Here's a fact for you.
3 days before the murder, Peavey had been arrested for social vagrancy and charged with being lewd and dissolute. Now, what that means is, I looked into this, he was arrested for soliciting male prostitutes.
That's okay. What the lewdness was, and that, what about the vagrancy? Because vagrancy was a thing that's like if you're just hanging around.
Yeah, which he was loitering.
Yeah, so loitering.
You're not allowed. I bet you no white people ever got done for vagrancy.
Yeah, no.
Hey, you want to explain to us why you're leaning on a wall? I was just waiting for someone. Yeah, you're leaning on a wall. I'm going to write you a ticket.
Even though, so this is where the fact that he was a black guy in 1922 came in. People just wanted him to be guilty.
Of course.
Yeah, right. Fucking hell. I can't, it's hard to believe today.
To the point where after severe questioning, the police decided that he was not guilty. But the Hollywood correspondent for the New York Daily News was a woman called Floribel Moore. She came to just a private conclusion all by herself that he was the murderer.
Oh, Jesus.
So what she decided to do was she thought she could engineer a scoop by tricking him into confessing. And this was her plan to get him to confess. She knew from films that black people were afraid of ghosts.
Oh, no. Oh,
That's
fucking mental. That's like in space, dogs can't look up.
That is ridiculous.
This gets better.
That's ridiculous.
Oh my god.
So with the help of two Confederates, a guy called Frank Carson and a guy called Al Wineshank.
I wanna have a beer with Al Wineshank. He sounds like a great guy.
You're not gonna believe this. Jesus. She offered Peavey, the suspect, Henry Peavey, $10 if he would identify William Desmond Taylor's grave in the Hollywood Park Cemetery, where she'd already been, so she knew where the grave was.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Wineshank had gone on ahead with a white sheet.
No, he didn't. No, he fucking didn't.
Oh!
So Floribel Moore and Carson, the other guy, drove Peavey to the site. Wineshank came from a tough section of Chicago, apparently, and he spoke like a proper gangster. And when he loomed up from behind the gravestone in the sheet, he cried out, "I'm the ghost of William Desmond Taylor. You murdered me. Confess, Peavey." And then...
Oh, my God.
That's fucking insane. That's ridiculous.
Crazy. Yeah, but
Masood's already said it. William Desmond Taylor spoke with a British accent.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
And so as soon as he did that, Henry Peavey just laughed out loud.
That's so funny.
See, because they'd been unaware of the fact that he had
that's
a British accent.
That's not the way I thought that was going to end. I thought it was going to end with this poor black guy running away. Because in 1922, like, the Klan was at its height. And he looks like, and it looked like a fucking Klan member jumped up behind a gravestone.
That's exactly that's what I thought. It's like, oh shit, you got the KKK Klan, on my ass.
1922. Because the Klan had a big resurgence through that silent movie Birth of a Nation, which really lauds the Klan, which came out in 1915, and it basically was like gave the Klan second life for over 100 years. So my thought was like, oh god, does this end with some black guy running away, and they're like, she was scared, like, of the Klan.
Well, apparently the burning cross thing comes from that movie. That wasn't something that they did originally. I didn't know that.
I remember, at the end of Black Klansman, the Spike Lee movie.
Yes,
well, we're going to get into a couple of first ever examples of things on film, ever so shortly.
Ooh, in this episode.
In this episode, yeah.
Ooh. That's my favourite thing. My mind is wanking.
Third suspect, and again, it's almost like you're preempting me perfectly. We haven't planned this, but the third suspect was an actor called Mabel Normand. Do you know about Mabel Normand, Suze?
Mm-mm.
Okay, so Mabel Normand was played by Marissa Tomei in the film Chaplin.
Oh, I do know who that is, of course. Yeah. Right, okay.
Even though she was 4 years younger than Chaplin, she'd been in the film industry longer when Chaplin arrived, and she kind of took Chaplin under her wing.
She was too old to date him.
She took Chaplin under her wing, and she became Chaplin's sort of mentor.
Right.
She was a popular comic actress, and she was a frequent co-star with Chaplin and Fatty Arbuckle.
Oh, shit.
Ah.
William Desmond Taylor was apparently madly in love with Mabel Normand, and there was a photograph of her in the locket that was found on his body. Now, apparently, she had approached him for help during her cocaine dependency.
Everyone was doing it.
And when she frequently would relapse, it would really, really upset Desmond Taylor.
Yeah. Right.
Mabel Normand was incredibly popular. She was like a tomboy kind of screen presence.
Did she sort of preempt Mary Pickford, or were they
kind
same
of a
time?
Little bit? They were contemporaries, but she was like one of the most famous women in the world.
Right. Wow.
She was the first woman to have her name on a production studio.
Oh.
Oh wow.
She was also the first person ever. She invented the custard pie gag.
Get out! Whoa! Whoa.
Oh. When she moved to Hollywood, she began a relationship with Max Sennett, who was obviously the guy that was in charge of the studio that did Keystone Cops.
Yeah.
And she had this idea to liven up a particular scene of throwing a custard pie, and it became like a perennial gag in the Keystone films. So that was her joke. Yeah. She was also the first woman to be tied down on railway tracks in silent films.
Whoa, oh my god!
That's her bit. Oh my god.
She's a meme. She's the original meme queen.
Yeah.
That's become a
like a trope.
Staple.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Trope, yeah.
And get this as well. She directed the very first film where Charlie Chaplin played the tramp. So she was like a trailblazer.
Right. Yeah. And not even 30.
Yeah. No. Unfortunately, because of her associations with Fatty Arbuckle and then this, so close together, like Fatty Arbuckle, she ended up being like ruined.
Right.
Oh, shit.
Oh, God.
She was the last person to see him alive. So that's why she became a suspect.
A suspect.
Yeah, but also, bearing in mind, like, they were able to determine that he died around 8 p.m. the night before. She left his home at 7:45 in a happy mood, and she was carrying a book he'd lent her. Eventually, the LAPD ruled her out as a suspect after a grueling interrogation. But no one ever really shook the idea that because she was the last person to see him alive, and you know, she was at the centre of this scandal, but also she was closely linked to Fatty Arbuckle. Like, her name was mud.
Oh, really?
Did she kind of have a resurgence like Fatty did? Because he became a director, didn't he?
He did, and even then that wasn't a resurgence because it was under the radar.
Yeah, but he kind of still made his way.
She continued to make films throughout the 1920s, so her films weren't banned like his were, but she never managed to recapture the heights that she had. She died in 1930, awful. So before Fatty Arbuckle did, and not that long after
Jesus.
This. So she was 38 when she died. And apparently, according to one of her close friends, a few days before she died, she said to her friend, "Do you think they'll ever find out who killed Bill Taylor?"
Okay, so that, you know, she's not gonna...
Wow.
No one guilty says that.
Unless they're like, "Oh, I wonder who..."
Yeah, is gonna find
killed her. Bill Taylor. And then she went like, and then she put her hand over her mouth and went...
And she's like, she's spinning like the gun on her finger as she's saying it. She's like, "I wonder who."
And she's pointing at herself like, I wonder who they...
Apparently, dark whisperings surfaced that tied both her and William Desmond Taylor into the occult practices of a cult called Ordo Templis Orientis, which was a cult of Satanist Aleister Crowley.
Hey, 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 good old Crowley.
Oh my god, Crowley. Man, Crowley! He's metal.
Because apparently Taylor had been seen in opium dens and indulged. Wow. And because in these opium dens, men would smoke the pipe and then they'd have sex with each other, some said that there were obvious clues in the scene of the crime that led to a homosexual revenge killing, and the studios were trying to cover that up, which was why...
the scene was tampered with, right?
Crowley just knee deep in Hot Boys.
He just walks into the opium den. He's like, "Right, you and you."
Yeah. light him up. Light him up for me.
Play the music. Play the music.
Before we move on to the next few suspects, 2 days after the murder, it was found out that William Desmond Taylor wasn't William Desmond Taylor at all.
Wait, what?
He was in fact a man named William Cunningham Dean Tanner, who had been a travelling actor, a gold prospector in Canada, and an antiques dealer in New York in the early 1900s.
What?
He'd been married to somebody who was from the Florida Sextet. She was called Ethel May Harrison. They'd had a daughter called Ethel Daisy, who was born in 1903. And in 1908, he deserted them, and neither had seen or heard from him ever again until a chance viewing of a movie in 1919 revealed to her that the actor named in the credits as William Desmond Taylor was in fact her missing husband.
What the
That's fuck? Really funny, because like, he could have easily disappeared, but instead he went, I'm going to be an actor!
The most famous people.
I'm going to be a famous movie star.
I better
star.
Leave this family, and I better do something that no one will ever find me again. Hey, you want to be in the movies?
He's like, thing. He's leaving with a bindle. He's got like a bindle, and he's like, everybody's got a hungry heart.
There was that secret past that could have also...
Oh. Jesus.
Yeah, wife or daughter, ex-wife or daughter. They could have gone up.
I'd seen
like,
him
hey.
In the films, yeah, in 1919. Faith Cole McLean and her husband, who was an actor called Douglas McLean, they were neighbours of his. And Faith said that she saw the person that did it.
Oh.
And she's like, I bet I'll never tell.
You're going to have to put me in the movies if you want me to.
Around 8 p.m, they were startled by a loud noise that she thought was a backfiring car. She never thought it was a gun. And so she went and opened the front door, and she saw somebody emerging from Taylor's home, who she said was dressed like my idea of a motion picture burglar.
What, with the
swag
kale mask and the swag bag and the
what, like the fucking hamburger? Yeah. Faye sounds like a liar.
She recalled that this person had paused for a moment before realising they'd forgotten something, gone back into the house, come back out, flashed her a smile, and then ran off, disappearing between two buildings.
Faye, you absolute fantasist. Yeah. What, so this burger came out and she saw them stop and go, oh yeah, and went back
tip-toe in. And went,
because that's what you do. If you mess up in public, like when I'm walking down the street in London and I realise, oh, I'm going the wrong way, which often happens because I've got no sense of direction, I can't just turn round and go back the way I came.
Yeah,
because people see me and think I'm mad. So I say out loud, oh, yeah.
You do the like, oh. And if you...
I go, oh, yeah.
Yeah, hold up your head, shrug your shoulders and catch someone's eye and be like, hey, look at me.
Susie's dead right. If I saw somebody just stop, and then just do a 180 and start walking back.
Do a Yui.
I'll be like, they've clearly forgotten something, but they handled that very weirdly.
Yeah, it's better if you go, oh,
but if
yeah.
you're a burglar, if you're not going to be like, that person's probably burgling. No, he's just a person who's forgotten something and clearly going to a costume party.
Yeah. He flashed her
apparently,
a smile.
Apparently the person that she saw was small enough to be a woman passing as a man, is what she said. Because only women are small. Only women are small. We know that.
Yeah,
well,
yeah,
you know.
Couldn't have been. What about if it was Coral Castle boy?
Yeah, he was teeny.
Ed's lead character.
Little tiny boy.
The general manager of Paramount Pictures at the time was a man named Charles Eaton. And several sources claim that in the hours following the murder, he'd gone into William Desmond Taylor's home with a group of Paramount employees and removed compromising items before the police had arrived. And bearing in mind that there was enough time for that to have happened because criminal investigators
didn't
arrive.
What are these compromising
Who knows what they were? Who knows
like
what
a bunch of
been.
Giant dildos? What was it?
Take those out. People will think he was gay. We only want them to think he was murdered.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Another suspect was Mary Miles Minter. The three M's.
Wow, let's
triple M. Oh. You make me love you, Mary. We're with triple M.
They must have had some cruel parents. Be like, let's call her Mary. Let's call her Mary. Why not?
Former child star, she was a teen screen idol. Her career had been guided by Taylor. He'd been her mentor, and she'd grown up with her father. Oh. And she was only 3 years older than the daughter that Taylor had abandoned in New York. love letters from her were found in William Desmond Taylor's apartment.
I was about to say compromising items.
Yeah.
So, but obviously the reporters seized on this because they were having a field day by this point. Like, oh my God, yeah. these things just keep coming out.
Jeez.
And so they alleged that there was a sexual relationship between the 49-year-old Desmond Taylor and the 19-year-old Minta, and that it had started when she was 17. But it's been revealed that her love was kind of unrequited because he declined to see her and said that he was too old for her. But nevertheless, there were love letters to him found from her.
Yeah, you don't keep the letters. If that's the case, you chuck them in.
This is a massive, massive invasion of privacy because copies of her passionate letters were printed in the newspapers.
Ooh.
And what that meant was, because she was a child star and a teen screen idol, her image as a wholesome young girl was just shattered.
Fuck, the people of this is insane. Like, everyone the ripples of all
It's like
of
a
this,
juggernaut that just lays waste to so many people. And then she was vilified in the press. She made 4 more films for Paramount, but that was just seeing out her contract. They didn't They didn't renew it. She did receive offers from other producers, but apparently she was never comfortable as an actress, so she turned them all down. And then the other suspect, who many people think is the most likely one, is a woman called Charlotte Shelby. Now, you wouldn't think it... the name isn't very obvious.
Charlotte Shelby.
She was Mary Miles Minter's mother.
Ah, oh.
She was manipulative. She was greedy. She wanted more and more for her daughter. She was living vicariously through her daughter, basically. But her and her daughter would fall out over money and lawsuits, apparently. But they did later reconcile. And her initial conversations with the police about the murder were apparently quite evasive. And this is a quote, obviously filled with lies, but without seeing the reports, that's hard to... And also not knowing her personally, that's hard to tell.
Well, no, exactly,
apparently she was, it was about to do with her daughter's relationship with Taylor, who William Desmond Taylor apparently was trying to keep as a fatherly type thing, but Minta was obsessed with him in another way. This is quite a huge piece of evidence that, again, is circumstantial. Remember, Charlotte Shelby apparently owned a rare .38 caliber pistol and some unusual bullets which were very similar to the kind which had killed Taylor. When this information became public about what kind of gun had killed him, She threw the pistol into a Louisiana bayou.
Bloody hell. Yes. Okay.
Which I imagine it was at that point was probably full, so it probably just landed on the top of the bayou.
It clinks.
Yeah. Clink.
She knew the LA district attorney socially.
This sounds good after last week.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Knowing someone socially is not, it's never a good start.
And she spent a lot of years outside the US to avoid official inquiries by the district attorney's successor and also the press.
Was the district attorney the same DA Jesus. That
was
still happening.
I was
going to
say, is it
That was happening at the time, but he was also in San Francisco because they'd gone from.
He could have moonlighted because that guy was a sneaky fuck.
I'll do both.
They'd gone from LA over to San Francisco for that party.
Of course.
Oh, right. Yeah.
In 1938, which was a good 16 years after the murder, Charlotte Shelby's other daughter, who was also an actress called Margaret Shelby, openly accused her mother of the murder.
Oh, bloody hell.
Shit.
Openly.
You did it, mother! She was like that. And she did it in front of a casting director as well. She was like, mother, I know that you did it, admit it, mother. I'm sorry, would you like it a little higher? You did it, mother!
Fantastic. We'll call you on Monday. That was great.
Thank you.
And
she's like curtsying while her mum's being dragged away in handcuffs by the Keystone Cops.
You stupid bitch. How dare you do this to me?
Margaret, you bitch.
Bring her back here. I want to try something else. Bring her back here. I want to try a different way. Get me a cigarette. You did it, mother.
Oh, she does like a quiet, reserved one. Years before Brando in On the Waterfront reinvented acting when he showed disappointment at Charlie bringing out a gun.
So there was another suspect.
She seems pretty like high.
And again, this was also a lot of this was also trial by media, like last week.
Of course.
In fact, more so than last week, because really? this was basically all just like conjecture, because the crime scene was not a perfect crime scene. They were
And also,
this in a horrible way, as we know, victims and women tended to get overlooked. So Virginia Rapp wasn't the focal point of that scandal. It was Fatty Arbuckle.
It was Fatty Arbuckle. Mm-hmm.
Whereas the focal point of this scandal was Desmond Taylor himself. And so it wasn't just there wasn't just one person to put on trial.
Right.
No one knew what happened, imaginations ran away with them. The press were the press was like loving it. This was sort of like I bet they thought this was like a whole new paradigm, as it turned out to be, because they were like they were reporting on Hollywood as this debauched place now.
Well, it fucking sounds like an absolute cesspit, but because of them.
Yeah.
You look at it.
I think it feels very much like this is where a lot of that evolved from, because it was like there was, you know, up until that point, pretty much like scandals and shit in the news, I don't think were huge. Weren't not to that level.
I suppose politics were celebrities then, weren't they? Like political.
Yeah.
Whereas stars, so, I mean, they were literally called the stars because they were godlike. The Hollywood stars, they're untouchable. Yeah. They're literally stars.
And I mean,
and this made them like, yeah, we brought them down to earth. Look at them, they're scum.
And there was like a club of them: Mabel Normand, Chaplin, and Buster Keaton. Mm.
And Pickford
and Mary Pickford and Douglas Fairbanks and like all of these people,
they all hung out.
Yeah, of course they did. And also people were in awe of
Mary Pickford was in a film called How Could You, Gene?
That's amazing. That's an oh wow.
Suze, I think you'd like reading up on Mabel Normand, because she, her production company, that was the first production company to ever have a woman's name on it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that production company unfortunately only made one film.
Oh.
But apparently, it was a masterpiece. It was called Mickey.
Oh.
The first film that Chaplin ever played the tramp in was one directed by her, where she was also the star, and it was called Mabel's Strange Predicament, 1914.
Oh, this is because he the first film I've never seen that the first film of his I've ever seen was called Tilly's Punctured Romance, and it's weird he's not playing the little tramp, but he's like this Lothario, young Lothario, because he was so handsome.
She was in that. Mabel Normand was in that.
Is she the young girl in it? She must be.
I'm not sure about that, but no, she's in that.
Oh, she's in Tilly's Punctured Romance.
She directed the first film that Chaplin played the tramp in.
Yeah.
But the films were shot out of sequence, so it ended up not being the first one released.
Right.
Oh, of course, right.
So, okay. It was the first film we'd ever played it. And also, he credited her directing style to giving him the leeway and confidence to create a character for the screen. So, in a lot of ways, like, the film industry has got a lot to thank Mabel Normand for.
Yeah, she was a pioneer, man.
Yeah, and then because she was just unfortunate enough for a murder victim to have fallen in love with her.
Mm.
Yeah. Because he had the locket with her picture in it, because he was besotted with her.
Oh, God, I bet he was a right annoying reply guy.
Oh, God, yeah.
Hey, Mabel,
yeah.
I saw you.
Show feet, stop.
Does he want me to show them or not? I don't understand.
Operator, I want to send a telegram. To Mabel Normand, stop. Show feet, stop. Apologies, stop.
You can't stop me wanting to see your feet, Mabel.
There was one more major suspect that kind of like the media threw up, which was Margaret Gibson, and she was another actor.
Yeah, Margaret Gibson's famous.
She'd worked with William Desmond Taylor when he first came to Hollywood in 1917. And again, this is another case of like the media having it out for someone. In 1917, she was indicted, tried, and acquitted on charges. Acquitted is the main thing. On charges equivalent to prostitution and with allegations of opium dealing. And after that scandal, bearing in mind she was acquitted, but she still had to change her name.
Shit.
She changed her name to Patricia Palmer.
Yeah.
And in 1923, which was after the murder, she was arrested and jailed on extortion charges, but they were later dropped.
Okay.
At the time of the murder, she was 27 years old. And she was in Los Angeles at the time of the murder. No record of her name was ever mentioned in connection with any investigation.
Mm-hmm.
But soon after the murder, she got work in a number of films produced by William Desmond Taylor's studio at the time of his death. And you might be thinking, well, why is she important to this? Because shortly before her death in 1964, she apparently confessed to doing it.
This is what I've heard of her. I had no idea it was this murder. I've heard of this woman who she was like, she wasn't that old, was she? But it, she was, obviously it was years and years later, but she said, I did it.
Mm-hmm.
In like a desperate, I need to tell you this.
Yep.
Why do I know that? Because I, his name wasn't ringing a bell. Anyway, to me, that says she did it.
Those are all the suspects, revelations and stuff, all the key bits of information. But because the crime scene was really poorly managed and, you know, apparently like fell of corruption, yeah. A lot of physical evidence was lost, more vanished over the years.
Oh, so they just couldn't hold on to the evidence? It just kept disappearing?
But copies of a few documents from the police files, they were made public in 2007, which is where a lot of this stuff has come from.
Oh, I see. Okay.
A lot of theories were put forward immediately after the murder and then as it went on. Books have been published about it. Some claim to have identified the murderer, but a lot of it's hearsay and you can't really trust what you... A lot of it is also because it was the basis of a lot of this new genre of true crime fiction. So like, you know, like...
And this was back then or did
No,
now?
In the interim. But like, you know where has... you know where they take a real case and then write a novel about it?
This is
how I think it happened rather than this is how it happened.
That's kind of muddied the waters as well. Yeah.
So there's no real way of knowing, but it is a key point on our Hollywood graph in terms of like big, huge crimes. It's a cold case to this day.
That's crazy.
There are also examples of it cropping up in popular culture as well.
Oh yeah.
Well, like where does it?
In Sunset Boulevard, the film Sunset Boulevard.
Oh, her name's Norma Desmond.
Shit! Of course.
And the name was taken from Taylor's middle name, Desmond Taylor, and Mabel Norman's last name.
Yeah. Oh, fucking hell.
As a way of sort of like going, it was to resonate with the audience that had a sort of like vague memory of what happened 30 years ago.
Wow.
Buster Keaton's in that film.
Hmm.
Looking all, yeah. We need to put Chris's Buster Keaton face on it.
Also, the following year from Sunset Boulevard, Hollywood Story, that's based on the Taylor murder.
Oh, right.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Sunset Boulevard's a banging movie, isn't it?
Mm.
Oh.
I remember I put that off for so long watching it, and then I eventually watched it. I was like, why did I put this off?
Yeah, it's like Citizen Kane. Amazing. You go, it's going to be so dry, and then you watch it and go, oh, what a banger.
Gore Vidal made a movie called Hollywood in 1990, which features a fictionalized account of the William Desmond Taylor murder.
Oh, really?
Also, there was a musical that opened on Broadway in 1974 called Mac and Mabel.
Oh, my God. Of course, Mac and Mabel. Oh, wherever he ain't. They're saying that film.
Yeah. I did it. That's right.
and that musical depicted William Desmond Taylor's murder.
Fucking hell.
So
I wish they had a scene where they got the black guy, the black valet, and the ghost jumps up. That would have been such a great song. Admit it, you did it. That's what you did.
That's so funny that it's they went. I tell you what, black people are afraid of ghosts, and they're ghosts. Like, I got an idea.
Mac and Mabel was obviously about Mac Sennett and Mabel Normand.
Yeah.
But also it had the murder in there because they were both.
Oh my
both
god! I can't believe I didn't put those two together.
So Bernadette Peters played Mabel Normand and James Mitchell played William Desmond Taylor in it.
Bernadette Peters, my favourite impression that no one's ever heard of.
Those are the best impressions.
That's about it.
Oh,
wow. That's so good.
But you know how Could Eugene that starred Mary Pickford?
How Could Eugene?
That was directed by William Desmond Taylor.
No fucking way.
Yeah.
Oh, no. I should know all these things and I just didn't. Jean, oh Jean, how could you? How could you murder William Desmond Taylor? I don't have to answer to anybody.
Because he was like a big player in Hollywood. It would be like I say, like if Tarantino ended up murdered in these circumstances, it would be like that.
I reckon
Uma Thurman's career would be ruined because they'd certainly find a picture of her on him. Also, I can't believe we're going to reference Quentin Tarantino and Uma Thurman and not let show feet go by.
He likes her the best because she's got the biggest feet in Hollywood.
I reckon, I don't want to be sort of Occam's razor about it and be boring and go for the obvious, but I think my thoughts reading up on it are probably that it was Charlotte Shelby.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was leaning towards her too. Although I did like the idea of the other person in the
who
in
confessed.
The 60s. It was like, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Who was that again? What was her name?
Her name was Margaret Gibson. I think maybe if it was Margaret Gibson who... And yeah, you're right, Suze. Confessing to it kind of implies maybe she did do it.
That you did it.
But what would bitch. Be the... What would be the... What would be the motive? I suppose maybe...
Cocaine!
Cocaine, yeah. But she didn't steal any actual... Like, she could have stolen loads more stuff.
No, but she asked him for some, and he went, okay, I'll give you some when I'm finished with it. And then for a joke, he sniffed up a whole bowl of it. And he was like, in one big sniff, and he went, ha, 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 it's all gone. It's all your fault. It's gone.
I left my wife and family. Do you think you mean anything to me?
And she was like, everybody's got a hungry heart. Everybody's got a ha, 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 ha. Left a wife and kids in Baltimore, Jack. Went out for a walk and became a great actor. She did
I'm imagining she's saying that with a gun holding to her hip, as she's saying. Like she pulls it out and he's like, what have you got there? I'll show you what I've got here.
I see you have something that you're... Are you pleased to see me? No, but I'm pleased to shoot you. And she shot him.
And then he does like the classic, like 20s, like, and he holds his hands up. Yeah. And then like he falls on a dresser.
Yeah.
And, like, he shoots him in the back and he like arches back up again. Yeah.
But maybe... Because this could have been lots of different things. So the people that corrupted the crime scene could have had nothing to do with the murder. So let's say, Margaret Gibson did shoot him. He was discovered dead by the neighbour.
Yeah.
Then the studio showed up and they discovered a lot of evidence that could have discredited them, which they didn't need after the Fatty Arbuckle scandal and now this.
Yeah.
So they were like, fucking hell. They'd already lost a load of money because Fatty Arbuckle's... films have been
trials.
Banned.
Oh, they were paying. Oh, yeah, that's right.
So maybe then they were like, oh shit, we can't lose any more. Let's get rid of all this stuff that could even like show him in a bad light in any way.
Right.
They didn't care about the love letters from a teenager because they didn't think that was bad.
Yeah, of course. Like, oh, that
was
like,
all of the stuff about maybe this cult, this Satanist cult, this Crowley cult that he was going to. They were like, get rid of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Crowley.
And yeah, and maybe that doctor. That fake doctor who said, oh, he's died from a hemorrhage, despite a bullet hole in his fucking back.
He's like the opposite of Ken Brennan.
Yeah, maybe he was like, maybe he did it. Maybe he knew who did it and was protecting them and was like, to give you time to get away, I'm going to say that he wasn't shot.
He could have been like, a plant of some kind that comes in and goes like, just to, because also he's tampering the crime scene. He's just fucking around, walking around, being like, hey, what's this? What's happening over here? It's definitely a hemorrhage. I think he had someone in the back of the crew. I think he's been shot in the back.
You shot me a bullet hole. It's there. Oh, smart guy, eh?
What are you, a doctor? Actually, I am.
Yeah, I'm a doctor, actually. They call me Dr. Fun.
I reckon Faye wasn't lying and it was the Hamburglar.
I reckon, yeah. It must have been the Hamburglar.
She was like, first I saw the Hamburglar, then there was this big purple guy who didn't know what was going on. I think he said his name was Grimace.
He was the one that smiled at her on the way back.
Grimace was just like, huh? And Hamburglar was like, oh, Grimace, you fucking moron, because he swears a lot.
Because he's quite a short guy. He's got short man syndrome, so he's very much like, you fucking piece of shit. God, you goddamn son of a bitch. Calm down, Hammy. Calm down.
Oops, and he's like, you did a real bad thing there, Grimace.
Blaming we're going to jail. We need to get our stories straight.
Grimace, you did it. You know,
I don't think I did.
You did, you did. You just don't remember it because you're so stupid.
Ronald's gonna be mad.
So let me get this straight. You two went to William Desmond Taylor's house. There's only one clown in this outfit, and it's fucking me.
There's only one thing I can think of, and you're not gonna like it. We're gonna have to go see the king.
Well, look who it is. Ronald Grimace and Hamburglar, is it? Shut the fuck up. You know my fucking name. You know my fucking name.
Well, I can help you out, but we're going to have to go and see the colonel.
Well, now, looks like you boys are in a spot of trouble.
You sons of bitches, I'm in.
And he's like, I'll just reach into my drawers of 19 secret herbs and spices. And he reaches in, it's just a fuckload of heroin.
Ha 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 ha
Nice, man. That was
That's brilliant.
Crazy. There are more to come in the Hollywood case files.
I quite like how deep it's getting, too. This is we're wading headfirst into some really crazy shit here.
Yeah, boy. And it's nearly 100 years ago.
Yeah.
I know. And it's like, and it's just as crazy as now. Yeah. Like, you hear that story, you're like, fuck. It's like, nothing's changed, man.
Yeah, but there's no Twitter. So it was just people on street corners go, do you hear what happened with Fatty and William? It's two different things, but they go together like lamb and tuna fish.
But also, like, this woman that set up this fake confession for Henry Peavy, the valet.
Yeah.
She was a fucking reporter. Jeez. So, like, if she was the caliber of reporter that was at the time, then trial by media is just...
Oh, it's insane.
It's impossible not
it's
to.
It's bullshit. Yeah. Absolutely, man.
Fucking hell. Do you want to hear what I found in the archives?
Yeah, what have you found in the archives?
I found this in the archives. It's not from the time, but basically Bernadette Peters had another song in Mac and Mabel which never made it to Broadway.
Oh. Have you got it on you?
Yeah, I do. I've got it. It's from a CD bootleg that was given to me by... a man, he said it was cursed and I had just run over his son.
Oh, wow.
But nothing bad's happened to me since I listened to it, so I think we can listen to it too.
Cool.
I think it should be all right.
Okay. Can't wait.
As everybody is aware, William directed a movie called How Could You, Gene? Oh, Gene, how could you? I know. Killed William Desmond Taylor. It was Gene, it was Gene. Couldn't cope with being known as a failure. It was Gene, she's so mean. Let's talk about Gene. Well, you see, William made Gene a star in her own right. That was until I came along, a Bernadette Peters, the star of this show. William knew that I shone brighter and so much bigger than Gene, and, well, I suppose you could say, Gene hated me as she did, so she killed William. How could you, Gene? How could you, Gene? Your career was just fine, it was brilliant, until Gene became a has-been. She couldn't deal with me being more, so she shot William dead on the floor. And she never paid for what she did. Well, Gene, let's settle the score. How could you, Gene? It's a terrible crime. Shot William down in his directorial prime. You got away with it, Gene, you slime. And it wasn't a drinking game gone wrong this time. And that's the story of Gene.
Whoa, oh, wow.
Bernadette Peters. You can't deny that was Bernadette Peters.
That was brilliant. I really hope that none of us are cursed after listening to that.
And that goes for you too, listener.
It's like The Ring. You can't, that's it. We've all got it now. great. And as Sue's mentioned before, obviously you can find us the live show. We're doing a live stream every Thursday on Twitch.
Twitch.tv/MrOnTheRocks.
Mm-hmm. That's at 8 o'clock on Thursdays. And we all individually have our own Twitch streams if you would like to follow those. Sue's?
Twitch.tv/SueKemna. I was just trying to think this is going to happen in time. So today's Thursday, because you're definitely listening to it on the day it came out. Eat shit, Slippy. Tomorrow, Friday, the 3rd of July, 7 p.m, I will be doing the whole of Les Miserables.
Please sing Javert's bits as Russell Crowe.
Okay.
Oh my God, please.
I will. I've got a thing that I always say about the Les Mis movie when I'm drunk.
Oh, what's
Which
that?
Which is?
Eddie Murphy should have played Javert and he would have won an Oscar.
That, whoa. I can see that though.
Yep.
Yeah.
I think he would have won an Oscar for it.
I think that's the hottest of takes.
I'll say it again.
You can find us on Mr. on the Rocks Twitter, on Instagram. It's the same, Mystery on the Rocks, spelled R-O-X. You can find us, you can email us. You can be
Mystery
like, yo,
Mystery on the Rocks, spelled correctly, at gmail.com.
Gmail.com. Yeah. You can be like, fucking, hey, talk about this Hollywood story. Also, if you like, if you're enjoying it, subscribe, give us a review.
Yeah.
Tell your friends if you think people are like this podcast. Let them know. Keep
just let them know. If they've got a birthday coming up, write a card and say, here's your gift. Listen to Mystery on the Rocks podcast. You're welcome. Eat shit, Slippy.
And join us next week for another Hollywood mystery.
Yeah.
Yes. Goodbye, everybody.
See ya.
Bye. Bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.